The sound of the door lock disengaging was enough to send him rolling free of the bed. It was instinct. Clint was out of the bed and on the floor, scrambling out of sight, almost before he was fully awake. He was buck-ass naked, and he had not meant to fall asleep. And shit, shit, shit. This was not a good thing. This was a very bad thing. They'd had sex in medical. Phil was going to kill him. He was absolutely going to kill him when the damn doctor came in. And where had he left his pants? The door had just started to open when Clint reached out with a flick of his arm, snagging his pants off the floor and dragging them back out of sight. He knew, immediately, that he would not have time to get the damn cargo pants back on, but at least they wouldn't be in the middle of the goddamn floor. Naked, regretting that, Clint just stayed still as the newcomer stepped inside. Not doctor shoes. Hey, Phil. Fury's boots crossed the floor, steady and easily. Morning, director. Above him, Phil shifted on the bed, pushing himself up against the pillows. Can I join you? Is one of those coffees for me? I considered double-fisting, Phil, but it's a little bit of a dick move, even for me. Phil shifted on the bed above Clint's head, and Clint knew he was accepting the cup. Fury took a seat in the chair beside the bed. How are you feeling? Considering what my file has to say, remarkably good. A pause as Phil sipped his coffee. I didn't even know some of those bones could break. It was the spleen that got me. It was just insult to injury, your spleen rupturing. Have you spoken to your family? Yesterday. Your cover stories are horrible, sir. I had other things to think about, and your mother is just... Well, I hear she's very difficult to deal with, that's all. Besides, cover stories are your job, and you are lying down on it. Exposure to alien tech was about the best reason we could come up with to keep you under wraps. Luckily, they already knew you worked in New York, and with your family history, well, they accepted it. I have a feeling I'm going to hear about it later. I'll set up a video chat this afternoon if you want. It might help, thank you. Another pause, and Clint focused on staying still. We got plans for when you get out of here, Phil? There was a long moment of silence. Are you asking me if I'm going to remain with S.H.I.E.L.D.? More or less. Fury's feet shifted against the floor, his legs sprawled out and his feet crossed at the ankle. There was a long beat of silence, then a faint sigh. You upheld your half of the bargain. You brought him back, you kept him alive, and you protected him. He's got a team. They've been doing pretty well by him, but most of it he's done himself. Barton's stubborn, and he doesn't like to lose. He's in therapy. Been keeping up with it better than we thought he would. I read his file. Under the bed, Clint made a face. But Phil sounded warm, approving. I'm proud of him. How'd you convince him? Threats, guilt, and I gave Romanov your favorite taser. I wondered what had happened to that. I need a call here, Phil. You back with us? Any reason you need a decision this moment? Well, if you're sticking around, I gotta find a way to tell everyone. You didn't plan for this, did you, sir? What are the chances you'd be fatally injured in the line of duty that I'd have to use your death to motivate the general S.H.I.E.L.D. population, that we'd be able to resurrect you, and that I'd have to undo that web? I mean, really. You're back? You have opinions on my contingency plans, so I'm gonna leave it up to you to tell everyone that you're back on the job. I'll draft a strongly worded memo. Clint had to bite the inside of his lip hard enough to draw blood to keep from laughing out loud. He would, too, the bastard, and no one would be overly surprised. Phil could get away with it. Sounds good. Rogers burned your cards. I heard. Rye, Phil added. I also heard that they were rather bloodstained when that happened. That's a bit over the top, don't you think, sir? I have a flair for the dramatic. Yes, well, they're gone. You're going to make me pay for that later, aren't you? Yes, sir. But a moment later he said, they're just paper. I'll find more. You can pay for them. Bet Rogers will sign them for you. Yes, well, Phil cleared his throat, and Clint could almost see the flush on his cheeks. He probably would. Well, then, I can let credit go to the source here. A soft thump. Replacements. I don't want replacements. I want to find... Phil's voice died. These are... Are these... Artist proofs of those cards of yours? Yep. One of 5 sets, I guess. One is still in the Treasury files. One set's in the Smithsonian. Another's in the National Archives. The 4th belongs to the artist who did the work. The 5th set was apparently in the private collection of one Howard Stark. His son dropped them off this morning. Said that they should go to you. Under the bed, safely out of sight, Clint's eyebrows scraped his hairline. Internally, he let out a slow curse. That was a hell of a gift. My God, Phil said, apparently arriving at the same conclusion. Shock colored his voice and a dawning note of pleasure. They must be worth... Don't think a dollar value can be assigned to them, Fury said. Despite that, Stark all but threw them at me and said that I should give them to you when I had the chance. Wasn't really interested in handing them over himself. Said he had other things to do. He gave a faint chuckle. I'm guessing that's his way of saying he's sorry. Clint smiled. Stark probably wasn't good at apologies, but he was pretty damn outstanding at grand gestures. I can't keep these. You can argue that with Stark. Good luck with that. Fury climbed to his feet. We okay? Sir, you used my death to manipulate people. You lied to my family. You lied to Barton about the fact that I was, in fact, still alive. And you let my friends and coworkers have a wake for me. So, we're fine, right? Clint knew what the answer would be before Phil said the words. Yes, sir. Okay. Want a copy of the wake? I got the whole thing on video for you. Clint resisted the urge to slam his head into the floor, repeatedly. That was a humiliation he absolutely did not need. Sir, that is by far the most appalling thing you've ever said to me, Phil said. Phil, after all the years we've known each other, you know that's not even close to being true. Probably not, but it's at least in the top 10. I'll give you that. Fury's feet headed for the door. So draft a memo or something, and we'll see just how big of a stir you can create around here. Director? Fury's footsteps paused at Phil's word. You owe me, Nick. Yeah, I know. But tell you what, I'll start by deleting the security footage from last night. There was a moment of horrible stillness as Clint's stomach bottomed out. What? Phil said, his voice faint. You're in goddamn quarantine, Phil. Did you really not think about the fact that there are security cameras down here? Jesus, 2 of my best agents, my fine ass. He let out a snort. Clint, get your ass up to your psych appointment before Dr. O'Brien calls me again. I got better things to do today than be chewed out by a disapproving therapist. It's just embarrassing. With that, he left the room. The door shut behind him, and Clint didn't move off the floor. He could just lie here forever. No need to move. Clint? He sighed. Yeah. How did this happen? Giving up, Clint rolled out from under the bed, getting to his feet. We're idiots. Phil scrubbed his hands over his face. We had sex at SHIELD in medical. Yeah, in retrospect, that was incredibly stupid, Clint said. Have you seen my underwear? Phil pinched the bridge of his nose with firm fingers. Far too often and not often enough, he said, and Clint grinned. Have you seen them recently? Phil fumbled around under the covers and retrieved them. How the hell did we let ourselves do that? Phil, I think if you come back from the dead, Clint said, stepping into his shorts, you get at least 48 hours where you are not responsible for your bad decision-making. I haven't heard that one, Phil said, and Clint smiled down at him. Well, how often do you come back from the dead, sir? Not like you needed to know about it before. Clint leaned over and kissed his lips. I've got to go. Therapy. I know. Phil smiled up at him. I'm proud of you. Yeah, well, I'm hoping there'll be a yo-yo today. So. Yes. Yeah. I know. Just out of curiosity, can I ask? No, Dr. O'Brien said, her chin resting on one fisted hand. There is no precedent for this. She paused, her lips pursed. I checked. Everywhere. Nothing in my training or my personal history has prepared me for this particular tangle. Clint nodded. Yeah. O'Brien waved a hand in the air. So there's that. She leaned back in her chair, one finger pressed to her lips. It certainly will cause me to rethink the goals of our time together. You hate me, don't you? Clint asked. You do pose a very unique challenge, she said, her face creasing in a smile. But it is a challenge that I enjoy. One eyebrow arched. However, if you'd like to choose to present less of a challenge, that would be much appreciated. I'll try. Clint rolled a ball between his hands. I'm not good at that, though. I've noticed. The end of her pen bounced against the notepad. She hadn't bothered to take the cap off today. You're making incredible progress. I am? You are. Clint nodded. So, does my boyfriend coming back from the dead count as a setback? It could be defined as such, yes? She took a deep breath. So? Clint nodded. You'd tell me if I'd gone fucking nuts, right? Like, if this is a psychotic break, and Phil's dead, and I'm talking to the walls like a Looney Tune, you'd tell me, right? Clint? Yeah? Phil Coulson is alive. Well, that's a fucking relief. Clint let out a little chuckle. Doc, I think I'm going to need to keep seeing you for a while. I'll put it in your schedule. She folded her hands on her desk, the gold barrel of her pen threaded between her fingers. How are you feeling, Clint? He took a deep breath, held it, released it. I'm okay, he said at last. He looked at her. Is that bad? That's not bad at all, she said. Why do you think it should be bad? I think that it should be harder. He tossed the ball, but it was a half-hearted effort. It didn't feel like a necessity the way it had at the beginning. Now it was just something to do to keep his hands busy. I don't know why it's not. It wasn't bad? It was fucking horrible. Thanks for bringing that up. Clint snagged the ball from midair. But it wasn't... He glanced in her direction, a flicker of his eyes. Her shoes were practical ones today. Black leather, scuffed on the heels. I thought that it would... She waited, still and quiet. That it would... She prompted. Would break me, he breathed. It didn't. No, it didn't. He ran a hand over his hair, breathing out, letting his muscles flex with the pressure of it. I wanted it to. Why? I don't know. He rubbed the back of his neck, trying to focus on the sensation. His skin felt like it was crawling. He sucked in a breath. I don't know. He let his head fall back. I put myself together without him. I was alone without him. And I accepted that. I didn't know how, but I just survived. He sucked in a breath. And then he was back, and it should be weird, because I don't feel like the person I was. I'm not... This was stupid. He stopped, his lips clamping shut. This new person you've become... Do you not want him to be here? No, Clint said, the word tumbling over hers. No, no, God, no. I do. I just... He paused, shook his head. But if I broke, I could start over. He took a breath. Know what? Never mind. There was a pause, and then the faint click of her pen cap coming off. What is Phil's bird? Clint's eyes slid shut. You're going to read things into this. Yes, yes I will, Clint, because that is rather my job. Two quick taps, her pen tip barely brushing across the paper. What is Phil Coulson's bird? He gave up. Phil Coulson is a rock dove. The pen paused. Rock dove. She let out a little hum. Isn't that a... Pigeon? Yep, Clint stood. See, judging. I know you're judging. You always manage to surprise me, she admitted. You're judging, Clint repeated, because you don't know anything about pigeons. You're a city dweller, and you see them everywhere. You don't even look anymore. You pass by them, they're just there. Part of the landscape, part of the city, and you don't think about them. Just another pigeon. But here's the thing. If you look at them, they're beautiful. They each have their own coloration, pattern. The iridescence of the feathers on their breast, on their throat, are just gorgeous. But you don't look. That's your fault, not theirs. His lips quirked up. See, pigeons were cliff dwellers. They built their nests in sheer rock faces, and they used the winds that result from cliffs. And when humans started building cities, building skyscrapers, when other birds were dying out or being pushed out by humanity, the pigeons adapted. They became part of the human landscape. They used what humans made to their advantage. They're smart, and they're tough, and they're adaptable. You know why pigeons survive? Because they are enormously brave. Next time you walk towards a pigeon and it walks away from you, the next time you come within 6 inches or so of kicking one, think about the incredible courage, the incredible control it takes that bird to stay on the ground. You are 1,000 times bigger than it is. But taking off from a dead stop on the ground takes an enormous amount of energy. It's a waste the pigeon can't really afford. So it stays. It holds its ground. And despite its wings, it holds its ground until there is no choice. And then it moves only as far as it has to. Clint gave a little laugh. Think about that. Think about how much they have to do to survive, to thrive. Humans are a threat, but they use that threat. They react, but they adapt. Have you ever seen a flock of pigeons mobbing a hawk? It's amazing. It's a bird that eats pigeons. They are a food source. But together, they will attack with a crazy ferocity. They will defend themselves, and they do it fearlessly. And more than that, they'll sit on the same signpost, the same light pole, as a red tail. Because they know they're more maneuverable, faster off the perch than a red tail. They're not afraid, even though they should be. They know. They calculate. He looked at O'Brien and grinned. People look at Phil and they don't see him. Just another guy in a black suit. Just another agent. And just another face in a crowd. And he uses that. He adapts to it. And when he nails them right in the back of the head, that average face in a basic black suit, almost no one ever sees it coming. But really, he's strong and fierce and smart. And if you don't see that, that is you with your expectations, and he will make you regret them. O'Brien was smiling. Pigeon? Listen, you know why pigeons survive? Clint asked. Most birds will only eat what they've eaten before or what they see another of their species eat. Pigeons will try anything. He grinned. And so will Phil, at least once.
Clint? He glanced at her and she leaned back. Why do you always look at my shoes?
His eyebrows shot up. For a moment, he just stared at her. Then, slowly, he smiled. It's something Phil told me, actually. He always said that you could tell a lot about a person from their shoes, where they were coming from, where they were going, what they considered important. You could understand what they wanted from a meeting if you looked at their shoes.
O'Brien was smiling.
Oh, he did he? Clint grinned. Yeah, and it's a good way to avoid eye contact. Most people take that as, well, being submissive if you look down.
He tucked his hands in his pockets. And people who think you're uncomfortable, think you're nervous, they get a little more confident. And confident people make stupid-ass, shitty mistakes.
She leaned forward.
Is that so?
It is so, Doc. His lips twitched. So I gotta put off my next session. Shields got me scheduled for intensive field reassessment for the next 2 weeks. Off-site.
O'Brien's eyebrows arched.
So I've heard. Not with the psych staff, though.
Just a supervisory agent. Level 7 clearance.
She struggled to keep her face straight.
Is that so? And where will Phil be?
I think he said he had a leave of absence to deal with physical therapy. For the next 2 weeks.
Clint gave her an innocent look.
I wish him the best of luck. I'm sure he'll work hard.
He tucked his hands in his pockets. I'm sure Director Fury will forward you my paperwork.
I'm certain he will, she smiled at him. Take my number, just in case you need it during your field reassessment.
Thanks, but I think I'm going to be okay.
Phil's nightmares were silent. He just went still and stiff, his breathing speeding up and his grip tightening until it was painful. That was usually what woke Clint up, the pressure of hands and arms and legs. Almost before Clint's eyes had a chance to open, he could feel the machine gun stutter of Phil's breath against the nape of his neck and know what was happening. He caught Phil's hand and rubbed it between his palms.
Talk to me, Coulson, he said, his voice low and gentle. And that was all it took. He felt Phil spasm against his back, his whole body twitching hard, his breath stopping, and then coming out in a rush.
Clint didn't say anything, didn't move, just kept rubbing Phil's hand, slow and firm, his fingers moving in predictable patterns, until Phil's grip loosened.
Sorry, Phil said.
Okay, Clint said.
Because Phil didn't respond well to, don't be, or you shouldn't be, or there's no need.
Okay, he repeated, bringing Phil's hand to his mouth and pressing a kiss against the palm, letting his lips linger on the skin.
Shower or bath?
I don't.
Shower or bath? Clint repeated, as if bored, and Phil sighed.
Shower.
Okay. Clint pulled away from him slowly and turned around to smile down at Phil. Phil's face was pale, his skin damp with sweat.
Come on, he said, rolling to the edge of the bed. We should have gotten cleaned up when we came back from our jog. It was a combination of a walk and a jog.
Clint setting the pace for what Phil's still recovering body could stand. They'd made it back to the cottage and collapsed into bed, falling into the blankets and into each other's arms with a sort of desperate need. Clint didn't question it. Neither, it appeared, did Phil.
Now he reached out and caught Phil's hand, pulling him up.
Shower, he said. It's getting late, and you need to eat. Grumbling, Phil allowed himself to be coaxed from the warm sheets and steered towards the bathroom. Clint watched him the whole way, watched the way he grabbed for the doorframe and used it to support his weight as he slipped inside. Clint stripped the sheets off the bed, snagging a couple of damp towels and starting a load of laundry. He remade the bed before he headed into the bathroom. Phil was already in the shower, leaning against the tiled wall. As Clint stepped inside the bathroom, Phil pushed himself upright, his arms shaking a little. Still, he reached for the soap as if nothing was wrong.
I can take a damn shower without a babysitter, Barton, Phil groused.
Not babysitting, Clint said, boosting himself up to sit on the edge of the sink. This is purely selfish. I just like to take any and all opportunities to enjoy your fine naked ass.
Phil rolled his eyes, but there was a flush to his cheeks.
Get out, Clint, he said, smiling.
Nah, I like it here.
This is not a peep show. Get in or get out.
Well, when you put it that way.
Clint stripped his shirt over his head, tossing it in the general direction of the hamper and kicking off his shorts before he stepped into the shower.
Hi.
Phil gave him a look, dumped shampoo in his palm. Hold still, he said, slipping his hand through Clint's hair. His hands were strong, his touch familiar and comforting, and Clint grinned as Phil worked the shampoo into suds. He didn't question Phil's need to do it. He just stood still and let Phil do it. When they were both clean and dry, Clint found a clean pair of shorts and a t-shirt, leaving Phil to get dressed as he headed for the kitchen. It was getting late, and he was getting hungry. The Shield safe house was a charmingly battered little cottage, the kind regularly rented by tourists and families on a beach vacation. The furniture wasn't fancy, but every piece was comfortable. The small rooms were well lit by wide windows and the woodwork neatly painted. The master bedroom was just off the kitchen / dining room, and in the afternoon, the warmth of the late day sun made their bed a warm little heap of soft linens and blankets. Getting bed rest had not been a problem. Getting out of bed had been a little more difficult. Clint yawned, stretching as he padded across the kitchen, his bare feet quiet on the polished wood. The kitchen was pretty nice, the appliances a few years old but serviceable. In the way of the best of Shield bolt holes, they'd arrived to find the cabinets, fridge, and freezer fully stocked, a neat accounting of what was there tucked into their briefing folders. He'd been cooking all week, falling back into the rhythm of something approaching normal. It had been nice. Simple comfort foods, some of Phil's favorites and some of his own. Neither of them had wanted to stray far from their temporary home, and so they did their eating in the kitchen, or outside on the screened-in porch. It had turned out to be a good place to catch the morning sunlight or the late afternoon breezes. "You hungry?" he called from the kitchen, leaning one palm on the fridge. He studied the menu that Shield Medical had provided him with, chewing on his lower lip. They'd eaten breakfast and most of lunch, but it had been a few hours since then. He wasn't sure that 10 ounces of low-fat, low-sodium vegetable broth, half a grilled chicken breast, half a cup of brown rice, and a small green salad was going to do the trick tonight. "No," Phil called back. "Uh-huh." Clint flipped the menu closed. What Shield Medical didn't know wouldn't hurt them. And Phil was still too thin, the lines of his ribs, collarbones, and shoulder blades visible beneath his skin. Sometimes, when Phil slept, Clint just traced the lines of those bones, relearning the contours of his body, memorizing him by touch. "Screw it. You're still way too skinny," he said. "I'm ordering Chinese." "I don't want Chinese." "No one cares what you want," Clint sing-songed. "You're getting Chinese, and you're eating it." He grinned as he flipped through the neat rows of information pinned to the bulletin board beside the door. Emergency contacts, medical info, drug info, directions to the local grocery store and pharmacy, and a couple of restaurants. The Chinese menu had some items pre-circled. Apparently, the last occupants had a regular order. "You want some tea or some juice?"
"I want some coffee."
"Well, I want a pony. Looks like we're both going to have to learn to live with disappointment." He flipped the battered tin lid off the kettle and filled it at the sink. "Tea it is." He made a lot of noise putting it on the stove, enough that Phil would be able to hear from the other room. "If you give me herbal tea, Burton, I will throw it in your face." Clint was grinning as he pulled a couple of mugs from the cabinet. "Oh, totally calling your bluff, sir."
"I don't bluff, agent."
"You bluff better than anyone I've ever met. Your bluffs are works of art. Your bluffs are sweet poetry and sexy, sexy beasts." Clint tossed tea bags into the mugs from a dozen feet away, striding back to the bedroom door. He leaned against the door frame, arms crossed over his chest. "You should not be up."
"Uh-huh."
Phil was propped up against the pillows, his legs still covered by the blankets, his damp hair slightly disordered, his reading glasses sitting crooked on his nose. His laptop was open on his lap, and he scowled down at it.
"Not up."
"You're up," Clint said, wandering across the room to tap Phil on top of the head with a menu. "What are you eating?" Phil swatted at his hand, way too slow, mostly because he wasn't really trying.
"Well, whatever."
Clint reached over to ruffle his hair, and this time he caught Clint's hand, dragging it down to press a kiss in the curve of his palm.
"Stop being annoying."
"Phil, you ask the impossible of me." Clint threw himself onto the bed, making it bounce, messing the blankets and wiggling around with far more force than was necessary, putting his head on Phil's knees. Phil heaved a heavy sigh, but he moved his laptop to the side, letting Clint settle down in his lap. Clint grinned up at him.
"Impossible, Phil."
"Every day, Clint," Phil said, a ghost of a smile hovering around his lips. "Your own fault for being so good at accomplishing that impossible." His fingers smoothed Clint's hair. "You need a haircut and a shave."
"You need to eat," Clint said, holding up the menu.
"Pick, or I'll pick for you."
"Is that supposed to be a threat?"
Phil's fingertips slid against Clint's skin, over his forehead and his temple, tracing the curve of his ear.
"If so, it's pathetic."
"I'm tired and hungry. It's the best I could do under the circumstances." Clint angled his head against Phil's hand, letting Phil's palm settle against his cheek. It was warm and familiar, and it made Phil chuckle.
"Wanna go down to the beach tonight?"
Phil arched an eyebrow.
"Are you going to make me hike through the sand again?" Just building up strength and stamina, Clint said, grinning. Come on, there's a reward at the end.
I swear to God, if I end up with sand in my shorts again.
That is pretty much assured. Sorry.
Clint opened the menu.
Want to just go with what the last crew ordered?
Sure. Live dangerously.
Clint surged up, slipping a hand behind Phil's neck and dragging him down for a kiss that was entirely too gentle and entirely too sweet. When they broke apart, Clint was breathing hard and Phil's face was flushed and his glasses were even more askew. Clint grinned up at him.
You're adorable in glasses.
Phil put a hand on his shoulder and gave him a shove.
Get off, he said, trying to hide his smile. I have work to do.
Actually, you don't.
Clint rolled over onto his stomach, folding his arms under his chin.
You're still supposed to be napping.
I am sick of napping.
Phil made a face. He reached up and slipped his glasses off, rubbing his other hand over his face.
It feels like all I've done is sleep.
Maybe, Clint said, reaching out with one hand and unplugging the laptop with a flick of his fingers, ignoring Phil's grab for the cord.
Not supposed to be working.
I have a battery, and you're not being cute right now, Phil said. He reached for the cord because his battery was almost dead, and Clint knew it.
Clint held it out of reach without much difficulty. He frowned, his brows drawing up tight.
Clint.
I love you, Clint said, grinning up at him. You know, that's not a get-out-of-jail-free card, Barton.
It kinda is, Clint said, unconcerned.
Phil paused and sighed.
Yeah, it is.
He ignored Clint's laughter, putting a foot in Clint's ribs and shoving him off the side of the bed.
Go order dinner, he said, going back to his computer.
But he was hiding a smile, and Clint scrambled up off the floor.
Sir, yes, sir, he said, managing a crisp salute, and ducked as a pillow went flying in his direction.
What?
It's hot, sir. It is hot when you make me do dirty, dirty things in the line of...
He ducked out of the door before the next pillow, or possibly a coffee cup, could make contact.
Hot! He yelled back into the bedroom.
He knew Phil was laughing, even as he was trying to hide it. His ears were pretty good. By the time he was finished with placing the order, the battered kettle was singing at him, and he swung it off the gas. He filled the cups and wandered back to the bedroom.
We got 15 minutes before the Mushu gets here. Wanna fuck?
Phil's lips twitched up hard, and then he wiped the smile off his features.
Tempting, Phil said, the words full of sarcasm. But I'll pass.
Your loss.
Clint ambled over and held out the coffee cup.
Here, have some dried leaves and twigs and shit floating in hot water.
When Phil gave first him, then the cup, then him, a disdainful look.
Hey, you could have gotten, like, a 14-minute fuck. You chose tea. Don't see how that's my problem.
Phil was holding it together through grace of long practice, but he was reduced now to hiding his grin behind the coffee cup, which means he was reduced to actually drinking the damn stuff.
You're a class act, Barton.
Clint spread his arms out, wiggling his eyebrows.
Baby, I'm so fucking classy, I'm gonna put on pants before I open the door for the delivery guy. It's the goddamn Ritz in here, he said, and Phil choked on his tea.
Pleased with himself, Clint threw himself into the battered rocking chair beside the bed. Phil's computer beeped at him, and Phil shut it with one hand.
Is there a reason you're over there? He asked.
The question bordered on the petulant, and Clint gave a little hum of consideration as he sipped his tea.
Savoring my tea. Clint stuck his pinky out. Again, I'd bring up the fucking, but...
As God is my witness, I do not know why I am dating you, Phil said.
Clint put his feet up on the edge of the bed.
Because I'm a sexy bitch?
Maybe.
Because no one else will put up with the abomination that is your insistence on putting raisins in gingerbread?
Clint asked, wiggling his toes.
You've just described hermits for the 90th time, that is.
Because I don't judge you for sleeping in socks?
Excuse me. At least I don't put ice-cold feet on your legs in the middle of the night.
Phil groused.
I need my blood focused in other places when you're in bed with me, Clint said. He grinned. Is it because I do the absolute best phone sex over the comm lines?
I need you to stop doing that. I think Natasha is recording you, Phil said.
He put his cup on the bedside table and reached out to rub a hand over Clint's ankle.
She is. Says she's going to start a podcast.
Clint choked on a laugh as Phil grabbed his ankle and dragged him and the chair forward.
Is it because...
he started, and Phil grabbed him by the front of the shirt and dragged him forward. Laughing, Clint gave him the angle that he needed, rolling out of the chair, his legs acting as a pivot point as he fell into the bed and onto Phil.
It's because I love you, Phil said, eyes laughing.
That was going to be my next guess, Clint said, tangling his legs with Phil's and allowing his head to be dragged down for a kiss. It was long and slow and sweet, and when he pulled away, he said,
But just so you know, the raisin thing makes it really hard.
Shut up, Barton.
Really hard, sir,
Clint said, nuzzling Phil's throat. His hips arched into Phil's.
Really, really hard.
Seriously, you can stop talking at any point now, Phil said.
You know, if you'd just accepted the 15-minute sex option, Clint managed, before a pillow was smacked in his face.
Laughing, he batted it away, fumbling for a weapon of his own.
No, hey, wait, bad touch, bad touch. No, that is...
The Chinese food was late. He still didn't manage pants. Luckily, the delivery guy barely raised an eyebrow at Clint's ripped t-shirt and boxers. Clint grinned and tipped him $40, so that probably helped.
You're covered in feathers, Phil said, when Clint ambled back in. He was sipping cold tea, his eyebrows arched and his t-shirt a rumpled mess.
Clint reached up and swept a hand through his hair, sending down in all directions.
I think we owe S.H.I.E.L.D. a couple of pillows.
Fucking worth it, Clint said, handing over the bag. Plates?
This from the man who just answered the door in his underwear?
I'm a fucking big tipper, so it's fine, Clint said. He grabbed his tea and settled down on the bed cross-legged and slumped against the remains of the pillows.
What did we get?
Phil gave him a look.
You ordered.
I've got a short attention span. Clint took one of the familiar white and red boxes.
Hey, cashew chicken, he said, prying open the flaps.
Good choice. I make excellent choices. He grabbed a crab rangoon from the box and slumped back into the pillows. He took the chopsticks that Phil offered him. He'd been hungrier than he thought, and he dug in with more speed than dignity. Phil's phone beeped, and Clint gave it a dark look.
Don't you dare, he said to Phil.
Don't. Fury can get by for a week without you.
Of course he can, Phil said.
I just don't think he sees any reason to bother. He took a bite of his lo mein before reaching for it. He flicked through the info with his thumb, and his lips quirked up.
Looks like you're going to be recertified for duty.
Huh, Clint said, not really interested. He had food and Phil. Phil tossed the phone back onto the nightstand.
You okay with that?
Clint shrugged and reached for the bag.
Yeah, it's fine, he said.
Fuck yeah, fried rice. For an instant, he just ate in silence, thinking about S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Avengers, his weird little flock of birds, so dissimilar and so familiar. He frowned down at the ice, wondering.
Phil?
Yeah, he said, shoveling another bite of chicken into his mouth, the box held just under his chin. Apparently, he'd been hungrier than he'd been willing to let on.
If you had to pick a bird I reminded you of, what would it be?
Phil's chopsticks paused in mid-air, sharp eyes coming up.
A bird?
Shrugging, Clint dug into the rice, his chopsticks shifting everything around.
Is there a bird I remind you of?
Phil chuckled, and Clint worked hard to hide a flinch. He ducked his head over his food, feeling stupid. It was a childish game, after all, the sort of thing he did because he was bored, but it wasn't like anyone else did it.
That's pretty easy, actually, Phil said, and Clint's head snapped up.
He blinked at Phil, who was still smiling around his lo mein. Clint opened his mouth to ask and shut it again around his chopsticks.
What? He asked, his mouth full.
Phil's eyes glinted. Cooper's hawk.
Clint stared at him.
A chicken hawk? He said, unimpressed.
Okay, a little disappointed.
Phil's eyebrows arched.
Swift hawk, hayseed.
Little beige-brown runt of a bird, Clint grumbled, which wasn't fair at all. Coopers were beautiful, if not particularly flashy.
He swallowed his resentment with a bite of broccoli.
Hunters, Phil said. Brilliant, disciplined hunters. Hunters that take their prey from high spots, from cover. Hunters that rely on surprise, on skill, on speed. He reached out, his fingers sliding against the plane of Clint's shoulder, against a scar that ran from his spine, down towards his hip. They hunt from cover with exceptional eyes. Eyes that make their prey stand out, any flicker of movement clear. But they do anything and everything necessary to bring down their target. They focus on the movement to the detriment of everything else. And that means they don't always protect themselves.
Clint's lips twitched.
Most Cooper's hawks found dead show the marks of collision injuries, he agreed. The chest and wings, broken and healed.
If they're lucky.
Phil reached out and tapped Clint's breastbone. You pick your goal, pick your target. And once you choose a target, you make it. You don't fail. No matter what the cost to yourself.
His hand flattened out, the palm warm against Clint's chest. Clint reached up, covering it with his own fingers.
Fast, smart, good at disappearing, and even better at using cover. Using the environment, using height, and not nearly careful enough with yourself.
Clint grinned, a flush of pleasure sitting low in his stomach, like arousal, like comfort.
Okay, he said. He reached out, catching Phil by the back of his neck and dragging him in for a kiss.
Chicken hawk, he whispered against Phil's lips.
Pigeon, Phil whispered back.
Shut up, it works.
For a while, they ate in silence, trading boxes and positions, passing cups and napkins back and forth until both of them were full and the boxes were mostly empty, littering the nightstand and the floor. Clint fell onto the curve of Phil's shoulder, resting his head there with a sated sigh. Phil's lips brushed against his head.
So, you're okay with the Avengers Initiative?
Am I okay with it? Clint grinned. Do you know what's on my phone right now? 32 text messages from Stark, and almost as many from Thor, because Thor and Steve have learned to use their phone's cameras, and now I get pictures of squirrels.
In his defense, Phil started, and Clint cut him off.
No, no, do not defend Thor. There is no defending Thor. I don't want to hear it.
Phil ignored him. It's just, if you're not familiar with gray squirrels, they are amazing little creatures.
Clint spread his hands. Really? Really, Phil?
Really, really, Clint. Phil was smiling now, eyes dancing over a relaxed smile.
If that's the worst thing he's sending you, you should be grateful.
Clint paused.
When you put it that way.
He shook his head.
Phil?
He grabbed his phone from the nightstand and unlocked it before holding it up.
Phil's lips twitched.
Clint?
Yes, Phil?
Why is the wallpaper of your phone a picture of Steve Rogers eating a taco?
Clint considered it. Surrounded by little pink hearts. I think we need to pay attention to the hearts. Those seem to be important.
Clint.
Because Stark goes into my phone and changes my background, and now he's decided that Steve and tacos are a true love match, so he's utilizing software usually used by 12-year-olds to decorate their pictures.
Phil's lips tightened into a flat line, his head nodding slowly.
You're saying that Tony Stark accesses your phone to upload pictures of Captain America with tacos and hearts.
I think he has a crush, Clint said.
I see how you might draw that conclusion.
Look, I'm just saying, I think I'm stuck with the team.
You okay with that?
What would you say if I said no?
Phil studied him.
Get you out, he said at last.
The words were simple and precise, and Clint grinned.
Yeah, I know. He reached up and caught Phil's hand. I'm fine. I'm fine with the team. I'm fine with the concept. I'm even fine with Fury.
You're sure?
Phil's thumb swept across the back of Clint's hand. Clint grinned at him. I'm sure. They're good. I can work with them. All of them.
When Phil arched an eyebrow in his direction, he sighed.
I've worked with worse, Phil. Come on. It's not like I have to live with these lunatics.
Phil grinned as he leaned in. Slow, so slow, teasing with the concept of the kiss, until Clint gave up on waiting for him and just surged up to catch his lips.
I suppose that's true, he said when they broke apart. His lips twitched. Oh God, though, can you imagine?
No, I can't, Clint grinned back. Luckily, Agent Coulson, that is never going to happen.
The end. Chapter end notes. And we have come to a point that I do not call an ending, but rather a moment of progression. Sometimes that is the best ending any of us can hope for. That we keep trying, that we keep moving, not forward, not away, but just continue progressing. I think Clint is progressing. That's about the best I could do for him. Thank you for your patience and your kindness and for the time it took to read this. Thank you.
Reader's notes. Thank you so much for sticking with me through this entire series. If you've been listening from the beginning, wow, why have you been doing that? I just really appreciate all the amazingly kind and enthusiastic comments I've gotten from people. It really makes my day every time I get a notification email from AO3 or Dreamwidth or whatever. It took me nearly 2 years to do this because, number one, have you seen the word count on this? But also, I have a roommate, so it's waiting for her to be out of the building for at least a couple of hours so I can record. And they just started building an apartment complex right next door to me, and I'm not that far from an airport. So today I've been interrupted by jackhammers, by airplanes, by the neighbor's yippy dog that she's not supposed to have because there's no pets allowed in this apartment complex, by little kids playing outside underneath my window, which stupid kids go inside and play video games and like give yourself diabetes. I don't know. Why are you outside exercising? And cars driving by and motorcycles with guys that are definitely overcompensating for something. But finally, I've done it. And I know there have been various adventures along the way. There was that one story where I'd just gotten my new microphone and I was still working the bugs out, and so the sound quality was horrible. Sorry about that one. And then there was chapter 8 of this podfic where I was coming down from a horrible, terrible head cold. And I thought my voice was okay, but going back and listening to it now, I was totally still the most congested, and so I sincerely apologize for all the, like, snot noise that was happening in that one. But I did it! I am thoroughly sick of this, and I am never, ever, ever recording anything this long again, because it has taken me nearly 2 years to get here. But now that I am here, I feel just like a great sense of accomplishment that I finally made it. You know, towards the end, I was just forcing myself through this just because I was not going to leave this series unfinished, darn it. And just the thought of all of the people that had written me and left me really sweet comments saying they were excited to hear the next one in the series, people that say they had listened to it multiple times. I can't believe you guys. You're the best. And so I'm glad I stuck through to the end, even though I now have about 2.5 hours more to edit. And then I have to send it off to my beta, which, by the way, shout out to Sapphire Scribe, who is going to end up beta listening to all of Hollow Your Bones Like a Bird's, which is, I don't even know how many hours long. I think the final thing's going to be like 11 hours. So that is above and beyond the Call of Duty for a beta. So thanks, babe. Sapphire Scribe, she's awesome. Go check her out. Listen to her stuff. It's great. And then after I hear back from her, I'm going to have to do re-records. And then I'm going to have to put it through all my filters and GarageBand filters and Auphonics. And then I'm going to have to add in the music. And then I'm going to have to export it and make the MP3 and make the podbook and then upload it everywhere. And it's probably like another 10, 15 hours of work before I'm finally done with this project. But I'm so close, I can taste it. I'm so excited. What you can expect from me in the future then,
I do have one kind of longer Star Trek podfic project going with Dr. Fumbles McStupid, but I think other than that, for the foreseeable future, I'm going to stick to smaller projects. I did just get a little carried away at Christmas with making little Christmas treats for my friends. I ended up making, what, like 25 little mini podfics? So if you want to check out some of those and expect more of that, things that are 10, 15 minutes long that I can make in an afternoon and do not require literal days spent editing. So much editing. I had someone ask me recently about my recording process. I started off just recording on the internal mic on my MacBook and have gradually, since I've decided that I am in podficking for the foreseeable future and it's a hobby I'm willing to sink a little bit of money into, I've been adding little by little to my collection. So about halfway through this series, I bought a Blue Yeti, which is why all of a sudden my sound quality changed. And for a while, I couldn't get the gain right. FYI, if you buy a Blue Yeti and the sound quality is terrible, for some reason on the MacBook, the settings are set to like plus 100 decibels. So you have to go into the MacBook, into like your sound card settings, and turn down the gain on the microphone. It took me ages to figure this out because changing the gain on the back of the microphone did nothing. My voice was still just like all over the place, way too loud and then way too quiet. And So I record on my MacBook with GarageBand, and mostly I use their legacy filters, the female narrator noisy. And I did go to the music shop down the street and buy like a $12 pop filter to get rid of most of the pops. I set my microphone on my bureau in my bedroom and kind of shove the pop filter in there because the pop filter is not designed to clamp onto my microphone. So it takes a little bit of effort to get it balanced perfectly, smushed in between the base of the mic. Anyway. And I pull up the story on my iPad and make sure my computer is actually a few feet away because the noise from that fan will get picked up by the microphone. So I have GarageBand running like 4 feet away from me right now. And I'm standing by my microphone and my iPad at my dresser. And I have to wait for certain times of day to record, of course, because number one, the hot water heater in the bathroom right next to me makes a really loud whining noise when anybody else is using hot water. And there's construction noise during the day. And one of my neighbors illegally has a dog and the roommate and blah, 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 blah. And I spend a lot of time pausing and having to edit out 45 seconds at a time because airplanes are flying overhead. Then once I've recorded, I listen without any filters to cut out all of my awful, horrible mouth noises and then turn on the filters, the female narrator noisy, for a final listen through, export it as a .aif file, .aiff, whatever that is. I was listening to a podcast. There is a podcast called The Podcaster Studio about how to set up a really nice podcast recording studio for cheap at home. And they had one episode about loudness normalization, and there's one about compression and one about EQ. And it's really great if you're wanting to get into podficking. I think they have a lot of great advice. And one of the things they were saying is they recommend loudness be normalized to minus 16 LUFS, which is the standard used for radio and podcast broadcasts. And I know it's a little bit louder than podfic generally tends to be, so I hope I don't blow out your speakers every time you start up one of my podfics. But that is the professional standard set by the industry. And I'd rather it be too loud than it be too quiet. Because I know I, for one, routinely listen to podfic in the car or when I'm out walking down the street and there's a lot of traffic noise. And I do find it hard to hear podfic sometimes, mostly because I'm like mostly deaf. Way too many hours spent with headphones over my ears editing audio. Editing audio. Let me talk a little bit about this series. I had only read the first three stories in the series when I started recording. So Something Shouldn't Be a Chore, Ordinary Workplace Hazards, and 5 or 6 Reasons for Kidnapping Tony Stark were the only ones that had come out. And then the first part of Dating the Long Way Around, I think only like chapter 2 or 3 was out. Those first three are still definitely my favorite. I have to say, Five or Six Reasons for Kidnapping Tony Stark is far and above my favorite. I love the humor, and I'm definitely more of a Steve-Tony shipper. Clint Coulson is not really my thing. I could take it or leave it. So that one is just hilarious. The rest of the series, I read cold, like when you hear me recording it. That's the very first time I've ever read it either. And so I think in a couple places, characters ended up with weird accents. And I'm really, really sorry about what I did with Gambit. I didn't realize he was actually like an important character. I didn't know who Gambit was when I started recording. Because the X-Men were never really my thing. And I'm sure over the course of the series, now that I think about it, characters' voices and accents have shifted slightly. At the end of this one, I found myself thinking, wait, what does Phil sound like again? I don't think I've done his voice since Ordinary Workplace Hazards, which was, you know, 14 months ago. I don't remember what I did with his voice. So I'm sorry about that. Probably if you listen to the series in order, it won't bother you so much. But if you were to jump straight from the first to the last, you might notice that over time, my interpretation of the character shifted as I saw more of the direction she was taking the series in. And then also, I think for a few, I just flat out forgot what voices I was doing for them. This last one, I really liked unexpectedly. You know, by story number five, I was so done with the series. I mean, particularly that last scene with Clint and Friga, where she's blessing him, and just the poetry of her phrases. And that scene was so fun to record because the language was gorgeous. I loved it. And that scene in the end where Clint and Phil were telling each other, I love you, for the first time was, okay, a little bit of a personal story, but I've been dating my boyfriend for a while. And he said he loved me, but I've never told him I loved him back. And I've been thinking about it, and I've decided tonight is New Year's Eve. It's December 31st, 2014. And I think I'm going to tell him I love him back. And so as I was reading that scene, I was feeling so much for Clint and the nervousness, because this is such a huge step. And I don't even have his trauma and his fear of losing loved ones, but just having to get up the courage to tell somebody that you love them for the first time is terrifying. So I really found myself identifying with him a lot towards the end of this story. So before I sign off, I definitely want to take the time to thank Sci-Fi Girl 47 for letting me podfic this. I get the impression that podfic is not really her thing, but I really, really appreciate her letting me record it anyway. I've had a ton of fun with it, and I really appreciate all the people I've met through it. And like I said, just so many sweet words and compliments I've gotten from all of you. You guys are the best. And I'm wishing you the happiest of 2015s. And I hope I run into you in this or some other fandom again someday. Thank you for listening. Bye.
Never been a beautiful boy, never liked the sound of my own voice. I wasn't cool when I was in my teens. I never slept, but I did have dreams. As I step out in this big old world, 7 billion just trying to go. Running through your bones, running through your bones. Yeah, you set my heart on fire, and it's all hardwired to my bones. I can count all the things I fear. I close my eyes, but they don't disappear. If there's a God, then there's a guarantee. But if there's not, it's just you. Running through your bones, running through your bones. Yeah, Running through your bones.